Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking about the scoop on micro-investing apps.
So Joel, I saw some folk art today, and I'm saying that to make you extremely jealous because I know you love folk art, man.
Why would you be a traitor to our friendship and go see folk art without me?
Yeah, I didn't tell you about this, but so did you know that the High has the second Sunday of every month, they have free admission?
Emily and I like literally just saw a billboard for, so the High Museum's like our local major art museum in Atlanta.
Yeah, and it's a major art museum across the country.
I saw the billboard that there's some major folk art exhibit at the High right now. And Emily and I were like, okay, wait, we got to research, like, when's the free days again? Okay, so it's second Sunday of the month?
Yes, so second Sundays of the month, it's free admission when I think normally it's $15. So that's why we went, you know, it's a great deal. So we actually went because I saw that they have like a Winnie the Pooh exhibit. And we've kind of
I don't care about that.
Yeah, I don't care as much. Although they've got a ton of sketches by the artist, super fascinating because you get to see the process, and there's a lot of drawings too where he wouldn't erase stuff, and so you could kind of see the progression of the characters.
Oh, that's cool.
Super cool. I'm all about the process and kind of how did you arrive to the final product. Yeah, the story to get to the final product is to me almost more fascinating than the end result. And I actually didn't even know that the folk art thing was going on. It was because it was called like Outliers, American Vanguard Artist sort of thing. But basically talking about how the folk artists starting in the early 1900s, throughout close to the 2000s, I guess, just led the way, I guess, with like kind of modern art and based on their sort of outlier tendencies and ways.
Yeah.
And the way they did things. So we almost went as an afterthought, which you would have been like murdered me over had I not gone. But yeah, you'll be happy to hear there's some Howard Finsters in there and some bunch of other guys I'm sure you're more familiar with.
Oh gosh, yeah, that I wish I could have in my house. They already actually at the High, they have a normal awesome folk art exhibit.
Yeah.
Just upstairs, I think the top floor, that's good no matter what. That's always there, a permanent installation of great folk art. Mm-hmm. But so the fact that they have this expanded exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have to go for sure.
Well, it's not just folk art. That's why they call it the outlier sort of vanguard thing. It's sort of an umbrella term, I think, to include just a bunch of outliers, just folks that weren't doing art, whether it be because they're self-taught or just using different techniques. One guy in particular I thought you'd love, look for Sam Doyle. When I saw his stuff, I was like, man, Joel would totally, I feel like that's right up Joel's alley.
All right, I'm writing the name down. I'm going to look his stuff up.
Sam Doyle, yeah, he's a self-taught artist out of South Carolina. And sometimes he would paint on building materials and kind of different stuff like that. But just his general, and plus his stuff is really big. And I know everything you like is like, dude, oversized. I'm like, where?
I love big pieces of art. Like, why would you get something that's like 9 inches by 9 inches or something like that? I don't know. I love.
You like the big broad strokes.
Like, if it's not at least 3 feet long, like, don't even show it to me.
Then, yeah, check this guy out. You'll love it. But
so, okay, here's my question. When you go in for, the free museum day, how bad is the line?
Yeah, okay, that's what I was about to say, because the lines were a little bit longer than we would have preferred. But we also went kind of right in the middle of the stinking day, so like right at peak hours. I would definitely recommend going, right when they open or maybe even closer to the end while everyone else is heading out of there, dude.
Yeah, but that's a good call.
But in general, still worth it and just fun. We actually hadn't been there with the girls yet. And so even though I've been there for work, multiple times with photography, never actually taken the kiddos there. So it adds another element of stress when you've got your girls inches from touching like a priceless work of art on the wall, which Evie straight up succeeded in touching something. I was just like, oh, dang it. Likely didn't set off any alarms.
Like father, like daughter.
I just like to lick it. Like just give me that artwork. Yeah, but that's a cool thing. We recently just heard about that, like the free Sunday thing. So
everybody out there, these are the kind of things that you can do, save $30 here or there and actually, go do something, with your family or, with your spouse. These are just awesome, potential date night but there are all sorts of, tips and tricks like this that you can find out in your town, probably with a quick Google search or asking friends, what they do to save money around town. And man, that's like, yeah, that's a great tip, because literally I saw that billboard and I was thinking, I need to figure out when the free time to go is, because I know there is one if you live in the county where we live. And so I'm totally taking you up on this. Thanks for the tip, buddy.
You got it, man.
All right, I wanted to tell you really quickly, I sold a bunch of stuff today on the Facebook yard sale site. And so I sold two items, made 90 bucks, just kind of trying to declutter a little
bit.
Nice,
man.
And dude, the Facebook yard sale site has gotten so much better.
Oh, really?
I'm surprised at how good it's gotten with kind of, I feel like the listings just look better. And
so like the user interface, basically. Yeah, it just feels better as you're kind of swiping through stuff.
Yeah, and it's like so much easier to post to multiple spots. Like if you're a member of, you know, specific groups, like the East Atlanta group that I'm a member of, and then there's a couple other ones that I'm also a member of, I can post to like all of them at the same exact time, plus nice. the generic marketplace as well. Mm-hmm. And so they've made it super easy. It's way better than listening to Craigslist now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had an easy time getting rid of stuff. And you know,
what'd you get rid of?
So I had like this big mid-century style metal filing cabinet that looks, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And so, we sold that.
I think it was a beast.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Did you tell them that you're going to help them take it off the porch?
Yeah, but I was also like, you need to bring like three people with you because it's going to take four people to lift. And
yeah, I'm glad I wasn't there for that.
Me and this like one dude did it together. And then I sold a mid-century style like rolling bar for like 50 bucks. So
cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like I was, you know, I probably could have gotten a little bit more for each one, but I'm just kind of like ready to get rid of them. And you know, that this seemed like a fair price for me to be able to sell stuff quick. So,
well, and just kind of going back to like that spring cleaning episode we did, you know, it just feels good just to kind of unload stuff and just be done with it. You can kind of move on and just remove it from your brain and just kind of move on with the things you want to think about, not just the stuff that you have floating around your house.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of things that I have to think about on a daily basis, you know, like kids and work and podcasts and all these things. And so, yeah, for me, sometimes if I can, you know, list it at a price point where I can get rid of it, you know, fairly quickly and easily without too much hassle, then I'd rather, you know, lose 10 bucks and kind of sell it in a way that's going to mean less mental stress for me.
So,
yeah, Facebook yard sale sites is great. At the end, it asked me to rate the person that bought the item from me.
Oh, no way.
On their punctuality and stuff like that. Like there were like six different items they wanted me to rate them.
They're kind of like taking it to like the level of eBay almost.
Yeah,
like that, man. So, accountability.
Well, I'm like interested to see how do I then see a user's like ratings? Like, I don't know. I don't think they've actually put that side out of it yet, but right now they're gathering information at least.
Dude, I wonder if they, instead of actually rating it, so just like on eBay where you see their actual rating, their star rating, I wonder if they're just going to feed that into like their algorithm and instead they're going to feature people who are rated well.
Oh, totally.
They're going to like feature their posts like when they go to sell, like higher up or sort of thing. Give them priority or...
Or maybe if they message you, like, because that's usually how people try to get in touch with you about buying something.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you'll see like a little something, you know, by their picture. Like,
yeah, says, this guy sucks.
Trusted buyer or...
Or even like trusted by so-and-so. Like if there's a transaction that you did. Oh, I'm so curious now as to how they're going to implement
that. Yeah. Or it could just be like Uber ratings, essentially, where if you get enough bad reviews, they ban you from buying or selling on the marketplace. I don't know. But it'll be really interesting to see how they use those things.
How sad would that be if you got banned from... Facebook Marketplace, man. Like, hey, man, I need to use your profile real quick.
You'd have to be...
Gotta go make a purchase.
You'd have to be one rotten apple, right? So...
Yeah, man, that's really got me thinking because I actually purchased a washer dryer recently through the Marketplace, and I don't remember any of that. So I wonder if they only rated me.
It might just be the seller that rates. I'm not sure.
Interesting. Yeah, because as a buyer, I don't remember that. However...
It would probably make sense to rate on both sides of the coin,
yeah,
right?
It would make sense. Maybe they hadn't... I mean, this was only like 2 weeks ago, though, for me. But yeah, I got a wash and dryer. I did remember it being easier, though. You know, they're constantly updating stuff. And they've got the listing, and then you click a button, and it's like got an automated message that sends it to... I mean, yeah. They just make it so easy for those transactions just to...
And you can notify everyone after you've sold it, essentially, but you hit sold.
Yeah.
And then it essentially says, you know, we're telling everybody that messaged you then about the item, so they know not to contact you again about it. It's gotten really nice because it used to be super ganky and people are like, wait, is it still available? Is it not? And so
basically you're saying it used to be like Craigslist.
Yeah.
Like Craigslist currently is.
Well, I guess you could just like remove the post on Craigslist, but yeah, it used to be a lot worse and Facebook Marketplace is really getting it together. It's really kind of becoming kind of that go-to, you know, resource for selling stuff locally. So
especially neighborhood groups like that, where you can just hop on down the street to pick something up from somebody.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I used to never even click like the Marketplace button because I would just look in the groups, but the Marketplace itself has actually gotten really, really robust, and I feel like feeding me things that I'm interested in, and then also just kind of making it easy to scroll through things. So, yeah, way to go, Facebook.
I love it. Awesome, man. Let's get to the beer. Today we've got a beer by a local brewery here in Atlanta, Orpheus Brewing, and they have donated Wandering Blues, which is a blueberry sour ale. I don't know if I've ever actually had this, dude, so I'm super pumped.
Yeah, it's been around for a few years, but yeah, I think last year they started putting it in like 6-pack cans, and I feel like they've actually kind of honed in the recipe, so I'm excited to have this one again.
So without even pouring it, you can pop that can and I can see that head and it's pink.
Yeah, man. Kind of like last week's beer poured a cherry red. This one pours like a blueberry, that kind of bluish purple color.
Oh, that's
color,
so funny.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about how when you held it up to the light, it looks like a soaked cherry. This looks like a soaked blueberry.
Yeah, which is like the exact color you want on a beer like this. So
yeah, you want it to match. I can't remember what beer this was. I was listening to a beer podcast and they're talking about a perfectly clear beer that this brewery was making, which sounded terrible.
It's like, what is there to see?
Yeah, exactly. It reminded me of like Pepsi Crystal or something like that, you know?
That's what my mind immediately went to.
And you're just like, oh, this is gross. It's like, what kind of chemicals are in here that is fooling my eyes?
Right. Yeah, and I love the can art on this. And so if you want to see, you know, a picture of that, go to our Instagram page. We've got like an awesome little Instagram following, instagram.com/pournotpour. Let's drink this puppy.
Cheers.
That really does have like a juicy blueberry quality. Yeah. Definitely some tart. It's also like a little bit sweet at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's got enough acidity though to kind of balance that.
Yeah.
Like it almost has like a red wine, like a red wine vinegar, like red wine acid, like almost balsamic, I guess. But you know, it's not that concentrated though. It's really a light beer. It's really good.
So thanks to Orpheus Brewing for donating the beer for tonight's episode, Wandering Blues Blueberry Sour Ale.
Yeah, this one's great, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, Matt, onto the topic at hand, the scoop on micro investing apps. This is kind of like a hot new segment, right? And it's been around now for a couple of years and, you know, new players are coming in and existing players in that sphere are making changes. And so it's kind of tough to know, like, wow, should I be using a micro investing app? And if so, you know, which ones are good? And there's different fees and some are kind of say they're free, but are they really free? There's just kind of a lot to sort through. And so we figured let's tackle this subject and kind of give people the scoop on, you know, what the deal is with micro investing apps.
Yeah. And by the end of this episode, we're hoping that you as a listener, we're not going to do a run through of every single app that's out there because I got a feeling there might be 10 more new ones, you know, by the end of 2018. So it's not, we're not going to give a comprehensive review necessarily, but we want to sort of talk about this maybe from like the 10,000 foot view for specifically you to walk away from this episode and to know, should I be getting into micro investing in particular through these apps? Because they make it so handy, man. That's like, it's just so easy.
Yeah. So we'll talk about what it is, some of our favorite players or some of the big players right now, and we'll kind of go over, you know, what their model is. And then we'll kind of talk about pros and cons. And then at the end, whether we recommend, you know, you getting involved in micro investing or not. And so let's start with like kind of a definition, Matt.
Yeah, man.
Micro investing usually takes place in apps. Micro investing is usually geared towards younger folks, millennials in particular, right? If you like to use that word. And
Generation Y for the more studious.
Right. Well, you are more studious than I. So it's typically done via an app. And so, like a lot of these micro investing players don't even have like a website where you can do it. I know Robinhood is one of the big players and they just like recently started allowing you to kind of trade stocks on a web platform as well. But it used to be app only. So there's just a huge shift right now that micro investing allows people of all income levels and savings abilities to actually begin to invest now. Whereas investing used to be this big barrier to entry. Now minimum trading levels and high fees have kind of been torched, gone by the wayside in this new model that allows you to begin building wealth in like minutes with almost no money.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of just the different ride sharing apps, right? You've got like Uber or Lyft and even the newest thing that is in our city, at least, are the scooters. And it takes no time to just be like, oh, I wonder what that's all about. And you just download the app and before you know it, you're hailing a ride, you know, you're calling for a Lyft or you're about to scan a scooter and... you know, drop a few bucks to try this thing out.
Well, and that's a good call too, because we went in our town, at least, from zero scooter services to like seven overnight. Like, I see all these different brightly colored scooters and bikes.
Oh, the bikes. Yeah. Stuff. There's a new,
all around
bike,
town.
There's a new bike share now too. Like the bright yellow ones you see like floating around everywhere.
Oh, and it won't be long before, you know, we have a ton more of those too. So that's kind of one of those things that's like expanding quickly and hitting up cities and then just inundating cities quickly. And so
obviously, I mean, the reason that this is happening is because they're popular, right? It's incredibly easy to just, everyone has got the smartphone. You just pull it up, download it or scan it, give it a shot. And it's not a huge deal. And you said it a second ago when you mentioned barriers to entry. That is the number one thing that these micro investing apps have going for them, is the fact that anyone can do it.
Well, and probably the first major player in the industry made it, you know, the absolute easiest. And so we're going to talk about the major apps that are out there right after this break. You know, the first major player that I know of in the micro investing sphere was a company called Acorns. So, and Acorns got bought by PayPal. So they've got, you know, this big major corporation behind them. They've got enough money to
they sunk like $50 million into them or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, Acorns is going to be around for a while.
Yeah, man. Acorns. So essentially, they round up your purchases and invest your spare change. It's almost like the digital version of kind of coming home at the end of the day with your pockets full of change. And you take that and you like throw it in the change jar, right? Except that I never do that anymore because I don't ever use cash.
Right.
And so this is the digital version of that. You know, you make all your purchases, whether via debit cards or credit cards. So yeah, so imagine making a purchase for $7.50. You know, they rounded up 50 cents to $8. You still see that $8 charge on your credit card, but 50 cents of that gets invested in whatever investments that you've chosen. It's kind of brilliant because there's, I feel like, a group of people who kind of counted on the change jar, because whether it be just sort of like having some cash on hand for sort of unexpected small emergencies, or folks that would use it specifically to save for stuff. And so one of the great things about Acorns is that they do allow you to invest in both traditional and Roth IRA. So you get that tax advantage, you get that tax benefit. It's not just money that's pushed aside and invested in a standard brokerage account where you're getting hit with your regular amount of taxes. You know, it's still tax sheltered, which is awesome.
Yeah, and Acorns has added, yeah, kind of a couple things to their business model. And so, you know, for $1 a month, you can get their basic rounding up and investing service. And for $2 a month, you can get their Acorns Later, which involves saving for retirement. And then for $3 a month, you can combine that and essentially get Acorns' new banking service. So Acorns has really, you know, grown, expanded their offerings now that PayPal has invested in them. But even though the Acorns business model seems, you know, really cool, and I actually really like the idea of people being able to invest their spare change. I mean, I think
it's pretty cool.
Brilliant concept, right? And the $1 fee every month doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Or $2 if you're going for the retirement account. Or $3 even, right, if you're going for their banking service as well. It doesn't seem like that much, unless we're talking about you investing $20 a month. And
yeah,
those dollars cutting into your investment returns can add up rather quickly.
Yeah, all of a sudden, $2 that doesn't seem like much at all. If you're only, you know, setting aside $20, I mean, that's a 10% hit, which is gigantic. Like our favorite funds, if we go directly through Vanguard, we're looking at 0.04 or 0.05%. 0.05%. I'm just going to say that again because that is so small.
Yeah.
And it would make the, you know, Acorns business model sort of seem like a racket almost if you're looking at it from a percentage standpoint. So it's definitely worth considering. And we're going to get more into like sort of the pros and cons a little bit later on in our specific recommendations. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, man. Fees. That's how, I mean, they got to make money somehow, right?
Yeah. And fees are always, you know, the retirement killer. So a couple other major micro investing apps that you need to be aware of are the Robinhood app. And Robinhood was the first, you know, player on the scene to offer completely free investing. So you could trade individual stocks and ETFs completely free, $0 for buying and selling, which is pretty cool. So I personally, this is one that I have tried out just with a really small amount of money. I just kind of wanted to, you know, play around and see how it worked. And so I took $500 that I figured I would play with for, you know, about 6 months and just kind of tool around.
Dang, you flush. You just got $500 just laying around, man. you and your side gigs, you're like selling everything you got on Facebook.
I know, right? I mean, well, I was like, sometimes to be able to talk about these things, it's really good to use them and see what they actually look like firsthand. And so I figured we would be talking about this, and I really wanted to test out Robinhood because it is literally the first platform where you could actually buy and sell stocks commission free. I just remember, you know, going back to high school, you know, probably like ninth grade when you did that stock market challenge and you tried to outbeat all your friends and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
It's a terrible way to teach kids about how to invest in stocks, right?
100%.
We shouldn't be doing that in schools. But that's always kind of captivated me a little bit.
Yeah.
And this small part of me, I mean, I know it's dumb, but I still kind of, you know, part of me wants to buy some individual stocks and see how it goes. And, you know, with Robinhood, I figured $500, I can give that a shot. And so I'm like pretty much on like Walmart and Mattel. don't ask me why.
You've got your reasons. You're like, I got girls and I know America's cheap. So yeah. you want to hear a quick funny story about the stock market game?
Bring it.
It totally jogs my memory. And so I remember doing that in like third or fourth grade or something, right? So my best friend George, back from elementary school, I would go over to his house and because that's where the bus stop was. And we would actually kind of finish up our homework, right? Well, the challenge involved choosing a stock the day before. And then the next day at school, that was part of the assignment. And like the work you're supposed to do in class is look up the stock that you purchased the day before. Well, we would do our homework that morning. And so we would have that day's paper, which meant that we could go back in time and make a purchase on something that we knew gained however many points that day. So confession, we cheated a little bit.
You're like the Marty McFly of stock picking. That's what you are.
I'm thinking of the guy. What was that show on like USA back in the 10 years ago, 20 years ago, where the dude got tomorrow's paper the day
before?
Oh, that's
right. And you'd go save people or something like that?
Yeah. Except for we just cheated in class.
You rigged the stock market.
We were bad kids. But specifically, I remember one standing out, which was Xerox. And they must have had a good quarter or something that that year. But I just remember buying Xerox over and over because we kept looking and they just kept climbing and kept climbing. So we're like, I feel like I can almost still remember the stock symbol, like XRX or...
That's probably what it was.
Something like that. Yeah.
What a terrible thing to teach
kids.
Took
me down memory lane.
Right, when it comes to stock investing, to pick individual stocks and to see how they do over a day or two, right? That's just a terrible way to do it. But so a little more about the Robinhood app. You can put in as little money as you want. You're buying full shares of a stock or an ETF though on that app. So that's really cool that you can, for the first time at your fingertips, you know, buy and sell stocks and ETFs commission free. I love that. But the downside is that you can't invest in IRAs, Roth IRAs, or any tax sheltered accounts, 401ks, right? So you can't do any of that investing. You're essentially using a brokerage account and you're going to pay regular capital gains taxes on it. So, you know, Robinhood is maybe good for a little bit of fun, but not really good for serious investing.
So how long have you had that, the Robinhood app?
I guess I've been playing around with it for about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can read all the benefits and like the pros and cons, whatever, like on a review site or even hearing us talk about it. But like you personally, like how does it feel?
The interface is quite slick.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. It's a really good interface.
Because reading about it, they're talking about how, you know, obviously, so the way that they're able to make these zero commission trades is they're an electronic brokerage. So they're able to buy and sell on Wall Street for, at zero cost. And then they're able to pass that along to the consumer, which is why it's called Robinhood, right? It's sort of like get your spot at the table without having to like pay the big fees, the big expenses. So I was thinking that like with it being this sort of scaled down minimal app that maybe it would be kind of clanky or kind of janky.
No, it's actually, it's really good. And we'll get into it in the pros and cons section. I think there's actually probably some benefit to learning a little bit about investing, you know, as you're using an app like this. So
yeah,
we'll get into that.
That's cool.
One more app I wanted to mention before we kind of move on to the pros and cons is an app called M1.
That sounds British.
It totally sounds like is it where James Bond works or something like that?
M was like the boss lady or boss man, depending on what century or what decade you're watching.
All right.
M1.
Yeah, and M1 sounds like a fancy name, and they are now turning into probably the second biggest player behind Acorns. And that's because they used to charge a small fee if you had over a certain level of investments, but now M1 has made their platform pretty much unlimited free to anybody.
Wow.
And so you can buy individual stocks or ETFs on M1. And the great thing too about M1 is unlike Robinhood, where you have to buy a full share of a stock, right? So if I wanted to buy, you know, one share of Amazon, that's a lot of money, right? But apparently you can drop $30 on Amazon on M1 and buy just a partial share, which is kind of cool.
Interesting.
So I haven't used this one and I'll do that. I'll put that on my list to
honorable
try
mention
M1
to M1. That's pretty cool. If you can go in with like whatever dollar amount,
So that's one of the big advantages over Robinhood. The other thing is you can invest in a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, a SEP IRA. You can roll over a 401k into M1. Also, no fees for that. So I love that you can buy ETFs or individual stocks on the M1 app. It seems to be probably right now, in my mind, the winner for micro investing because there are literally no fees. You're not paying a dime to anybody to do these trades. And you can buy some of these, some awesome ETFs and some awesome individual stocks completely free from an app on your phone. And so, yeah, M1, now that I've tried Robinhood out, I'm totally going to try M1 out and give it a shot just to kind of see, how it works and if I actually like it using the app. But I think in particular for people that are interested in micro investing or investing through an app on their phone, M1 is probably that logical choice because of the commission-free trades. But then on top of that, because of the ability to invest your money in tax-sheltered retirement accounts.
Yeah, it almost seems like they're kind of going after the big guys, right? Like Vanguard and Fidelity and even like Charles Schwab. Like if you can go to M1 and do all of your trades, well, specifically ETFs, I like ETFs personally. That's like the Vanguard ETF, VOO. That's like my number one. I have a ton of money invested with them. If I can make those ETF trades via this app from the comfort of my thumb, like why would I want to sit down at my desktop computer, I guess, and have to log in when I can just do a thumb recognition?
So now that we've named the top three micro investing app players, I'll just say there's a couple others. There's Stash, there's Clink. We're not going to mention those because those have higher fees, and in a traditional sense their fees are super low too, but we thought these players definitely deserve the most merit. They're the biggest ones and they're the ones that can offer some of the best options. Let's talk about the pros and cons, Matt, right after the break. All right, Matt, back from the break. Let's go over the pros and cons of microinvesting.
Yeah, man. So the first one, it is so incredibly easy to get started. Most oftentimes, you can be investing in 5 minutes or less. And like we were talking about earlier, that's what's so great about these apps is, in 10 seconds, you can have it downloaded and you can have signed up for an account. You can even link it to, like your Facebook and whatever. And before you know it, you're rolling and you're able to just try it out. It's incredibly easy. The barriers to entry have been either lowered or completely removed. And something that was from before that was just this sort of elitist sort of thing, like, I'm going to go in and talk to my financial advisor and open up a Roth IRA, 401k, blah, blah account. It's like super fancy talk. And then all of a sudden you've got like kids downloading this app, trying this thing out. And before you know it, they're saving money. I love it from that standpoint. The fact that folks out there can start investing, at a way earlier age as well, right? Because apps, like a 10-year-old can download an app. Like I wouldn't recommend it and allow your kid to do that.
I'm sure it's in the terms and conditions somewhere that they're not supposed to. But
right, yeah. But it's that easy. And so from that standpoint, just of the ease of use, I love that.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's amazing. I think how much easier investing has become and how much more transparent. And then this is just kind of adds that extra layer of ease and simplicity for people. That's incredible. Another pro is that it's great for folks that don't have access to a 401k and want to invest in smaller chunks. So the 401k is like the super automated thing, right? A certain percentage of your paycheck comes out every month and gets invested. And the great thing is, you're saving for retirement over the long haul. Well, if you don't have access to that, something like Acorns, that is kind of this automated investment style, taking money out every time you make a purchase. I kind of love that way. If you're having a hard time getting the ball rolling, getting started, Acorns can kind of be that push in the right direction, the push to get you starting putting some of your money in investments for the long term. So I think that's a big pro for a lot of people. Yeah, and then the last pro that we need to mention is that these apps have low or no fees. So with an app like Acorns that we mentioned, it's anywhere from $1 to $3 a month based on which level of service you want. And, that's really not that expensive. That's definitely less than, what you're paying for Netflix or Hulu or any of those things. But then other apps like Robinhood or M1 have no fees.
And yeah, I really like that. Cool, man. Now let's cover some of the cons. So, you just mentioned how, some of these have little to no fee at all. Well, even though some of these fees might be low, it's worth looking at it as a percentage of how much you're saving. And so, again, you might be thinking, $2, that's really nothing for me to really get my savings off the ground. But at the end of the month, if you're only saving like $20, that's a lot of money that you're spending to save those $20. we would recommend that instead of looking at it as a dollar amounts, you know, as a fee, instead look at it as a percentage. Because what you'll find is that if you go straight through a low-cost investment company like our favorite Vanguard or Fidelity or even Charles Schwab, you'll find that the percentage is significantly lower. And I'm talking the difference between like maybe 0.35%, which sounds like hardly anything at all, down to 0.04 or 5%. So you're looking, I mean, yeah, seven times the cost.
Yeah, another con is that micro investing can also and often will mean micro result. Matt and I think that you should be investing a whole lot more than just your spare change.
Yeah.
If that's all you're putting into your investments, and if you're only investing in a brokerage account and you're not saving in tax sheltered retirement accounts, you're going to be broke in retirement. And we want more for you than that. And so investing just your spare change, just what's coming out between, you know, your cushions or rounding up purchases like Acorns does, just doing that, that's not going to make a big dent in your retirement savings over the long run. And so you need to be doing a lot more than that. So make sure if you are using one of these apps, you're using it wisely, and it's not the only way that you're investing.
Also, some of these apps encourage you to purchase individual stocks. While you can purchase ETFs in them, most folks are buying shares of Snapchat or Facebook, you know, like the basically whatever's hot and whatever's in the news or whatever it is that they're using.
It's like, oh, I like Snapchat, I'll buy the stock, you know?
It's like, that is not the wisest way to purchase stocks.
I think that actually is the number one stock purchased on the Robinhood app.
Is it really?
For real, Snapchat, yeah. So
they're like, what do I buy? I don't know, I use Facebook a lot.
Yeah, it's like millennials literally buying social media stocks. So you want to be, you know, careful about how you're investing your money, and those just lend themselves to investing your money stupidly in, you know, one or two stocks that might or might not have good returns over time.
Yeah, it goes without saying that Joel and I believe in a very widely diversified approach and strategy towards investing, especially retirement investing, like the ultimate, you know, investment. And so yeah, don't buy individual stocks if you can't afford to lose that money. Oh dude, and one more con that I just thought of is actually like the risk of purchasing something on a whim. So, right, like obviously like Facebook, it's just, you know, you haven't put a whole lot of thought into it. But also folks that are sort of thinking about stocks and are kind of hearing what's in the news, if it's that easy to sort of buy that stock because it's in an app, it's on your phone, it's in your pocket. Like in 10 seconds, you could buy like several hundred dollars or hundred thousands of dollars worth of stocks. I almost see that as a bad thing. You know, that certainly that's one of the benefits of this being something that's great for a lot of people, is just like how easy it is to do that. But at the same time, for folks that don't have the knowledge and don't have a plan, I see that as a negative. They're listening to the news, or they hear that, you know, there's rumor about something happening to, you know, Facebook or Tesla. Like Elon Musk is going crazy on his Twitter account, like he's prone to do. And it seems like that he's got some huge breakthrough. Well, you might think, well, shoot, I'm going to freaking buy some Tesla real quick before everybody else catches the news because I'm young and I'm hearing what's going on. And I see that as a negative. You know, that's not the, again, if you want to do that because you want to have some fun or try something out like Joel did with, you know, $500 just laying around.
But really, it's like gambling. Like, and I knew that putting $500 bucks into it, I knew this was like 0.02% of my portfolio or something like that. I don't care. It's kind of like gambling and testing it out. And so
testing it out, have some fun just to try it out. Like, yeah. But again, if you can't afford to lose it, don't invest your money that way.
And I think it's an amazing point. I think for people that lack the knowledge and the discipline, they can, you know, purchase something on a whim or sell something on a whim, and that can trigger tax consequences and ultimately, you know, much worse than that, just severe losses of your capital. You and I, Matt, we both believe in long-term stock investing. And so if you were going to use an app like M1 or Robinhood even, we would hope that when you're buying something, you're holding it for a decade or longer. And that's just not the case for most of the people.
That's the case.
Yeah. Right. Using these apps. And so that is a huge downside that people would, you know, use it for day trading or, you know, quick buy and sell transactions that are you know, really actually going to hurt them.
Or even, man, just to like get their hands on some cash. You know, I don't know if you've made the mistake of like a late night purchase on Amazon, like from your phone or something like that. Or even like just a comment that you're like, oh man, I shouldn't have. It was the weekend. I shouldn't have made that comment.
Oh, you're that guy in the YouTube comment section, Matt.
Yeah, not even YouTube. You know what I'm talking about. Imagine that, but like with consequences, with monetary value attached to that, you know? Like I would love to know what the stats are of like some of these purchases that go down like late night when someone's maybe not in the best frame of mind and they're like, oh man, I got to get my hands on $300 by tomorrow because I got to do this. And they're like, I'm just going to sell some of this with zero regard to, you know, what the market's doing and if it's a downturn or anything like that. That's yeah. And that concerns me.
And 99% of people at least will not use these apps wisely. And so, you know, if you can be one of those uber disciplined people that wants commission-free ETF purchases inside of a Roth IRA through a company like M1, I think that's great. But yeah, just make sure that you're willing to be in it for the long haul. Cause yeah, that is, I agree. I think that's actually probably, you know, the biggest potential con to these apps. All right, Matt, let's move on. So do we actually recommend using these micro-investing apps?
Yeah, so micro-investing, we think, can be a small part of your stock market investments. Apps have gotten so much better over the last few years, especially, and the fees have been reduced to next to nothing. And so, you know, micro-investing apps are probably here to stay. Just know that investing regularly in tax-advantaged accounts is probably going to be the best bet for your long-term financial health. And maybe, you know, it's not just a small part of your investment strategy in your portfolio, but specifically, I see it better suited to be like an initial, like the early onset portion, like as on, like on a timeline, right? Early on, if you're trying to get into investing and you're trying to find ways to set aside money, whether that be through a low to no cost brokerage like Robinhood or just finding ways to set aside money, what, you know, like through Acorns where it just kind of rounds up. I see that being a great approach and a great strategy to, like we said earlier, just kind of like kicking it off and getting started. But honestly, long term, I see that being less and less a part of your overall financial plan. You know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no doubt. No, I think, yeah, it can be kind of that jumpstart, that way for someone to actually get in on investing and figure out, you know, how to start and maybe learn about it. I think another benefit is that it kind of piques your curiosity. And
yeah.
And so, you know, doing something like Acorns or Robinhood, you know, hopefully learning a little bit, you know, piques your curiosity about investing. And maybe you start doing some more reading and some more thinking about, you know, your long-term financial future. And there's, a huge swath of Americans that haven't thought for more than 15 minutes about their long-term financial future.
Right.
And so maybe, you know, one of these apps kind of gets them thinking, you know, along those lines. And I think that's great. All right. So yeah, do I recommend it? Well, I would say I personally don't see myself continuing to invest on micro investing platforms. But I think for a lot of people, this, like we said, this can be, you know, the kickstart to thinking about stashing money away for the future. I think for most people, you know, the pitfalls and the cons are actually greater than the potential rewards, specifically in regards to moving your money around, you know, often, which is a terrible thing to do when it comes to the stock market. You want to be well diversified in your holdings and you want to hold on to that well diversified portfolio over, you know, the long run. We're talking decades. And so anything that causes you to even think about, you know, moving money around willy nilly here and there, I just think that's a terrible strategy, a terrible way to approach it. I think micro investing apps have a lot going for them. I think they're really cool. I think the interfaces are neat. I think it's getting a lot of people interested in saving for retirement that haven't thought about it before. But I think ultimately, you know, there are a lot of potential pitfalls that could really derail your savings for the long term.
Yes. I think what we said earlier in the fact that it kind of gets people curious, I think that's one of the best benefits of this. I think that it gets people thinking about it. They get curious. They kind of do a little bit of digging. They kind of do some Googling, see what's out there. And it gets them down the path of better financial literacy versus just like this app that they kind of use and they don't really know exactly how it works, but they're doing it. And I love the results of that because it gets people saving. But at the core, you still need to have a plan. And so if it converts app users into spreadsheet users, like that would be the path that I would love to see more users kind of going down. I think it's all about having a plan, being able to think things through, and then, you know, based on that plan, based on your goals and what it is that you want to pursue, make the changes that you need to make to achieve those things. And so along those lines, we would recommend you to, if you haven't already, to listen to episode 9, where we talked about how investing for retirement is a lot simpler than you think. It's not this sort of complicated thing. And certainly app developers out there have found a way to develop that into this slick app that you can kind of just touch on your phone a few times and all of a sudden you're saving and setting aside chunks of money. But really, it's not that hard to begin with. It oftentimes does get overly complicated if you allow it to kind of build up to be this sort of giant thing. But listen to that episode. We really try to break it down and help you realize that it is so much simpler than you think.
Yeah, I agree, Matt. Investing as an individual investor has gotten so easy. You know, and these apps are just kind of that furthest reach of like, how easy can it get? But just regular investing through, you know, a discount brokerage house is so easy. We tell you how in that episode. That's an episode you should listen to before you go all in on one of these micro investing apps. All right, let's head back to the beer, Matt. Tonight we're drinking Wandering Blues, a blueberry sour ale from Orpheus Brewing.
Yeah, thank you guys again so much for donating this beer. We think it's delicious. What I've noticed as it's sort of warmed up, man, as I've gotten to the bottom of my glass, is it's almost got like, I feel like I say this too much, but it almost has like a weedy finish. It, to me, it kind of finishes like a Berliner Weiss.
Yeah, I think it's pleasantly tart, along with, you know, nice dose of blueberry sweetness. And it really, it has like that kind of feeling of biting into a blueberry. And you know, a lot of these fruit beers, I would say, kind of lack some of the fruitiness that you're looking for.
Oh yeah, this one's got it for sure.
This one's got it. This one's got blueberries out the wazoo. And so
fruity, tart, I think that's excellent for the summer.
It was actually fermented with fresh blueberries that were actually juiced.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's probably got like actual blueberry juice in there, which, yeah, it's this is really good. So yeah, Orpheus literally just put this back out in six packs into the wild in our fair state of Georgia, and
yeah.
It's really good. Look for it at your local bottle shop.
Yeah, if you're coming down to Atlanta, or if you're a local, yeah, check these out. Man, before we do like our little recap that we normally do, what are your thoughts in general? Like, so specifically, we're talking about M1, where it seemed like that them and potentially some future apps that are out there are looking to compete with some of the big names like Vanguard, and, you know, even kind of replace them altogether if they've got zero fees. Like, do you feel comfortable? Like, would you transfer like your entire Roth IRA over from, you know, a big player like Vanguard or Fidelity or somebody like that into this app?
So I wouldn't transfer my funds over, and there's a couple of reasons. One, you know, my 401k through work is through Vanguard, and so just doing all my investing in one place just gives me kind of one less thing to worry about, one less headache.
Yeah.
And especially when, you know, the expense ratio on the fund that I'm in is so ridiculously low, to move into an app that has, you know, kind of, I don't know the future for them. I'm not willing to do that. You know, I would definitely be willing to maybe start dabbling in an app like M1 or like I did with Robinhood. But I definitely, you know, think that, you know, Vanguard is this kind of stalwart, and or Fidelity or Charles Schwab.
Yep.
They're these companies that have been around for decades and, you know, will likely continue to be around because they've built a business that will stand the test of time.
Yeah, man, certainly. They've got a lot more to lose than like these new startups, right? Like, I mean, we didn't even talk about this, but I think of even like customer service. And I've never had to get on the phone to talk to Vanguard or anything like that, but I got to imagine it would be a heck of a lot easier to talk to somebody and have them fix the problem. Vanguard versus, you know, Robinhood, where I'm just like, where's my money?
Yeah.
And like, nobody picks up. But yeah, I'm totally with you.
They only probably do customer service through Snapchat, I would imagine. So
they're like, new number, who dis? Yeah, so I'm self-employed, so I don't have a 401k. I've just got the Roth IRA, and I would not, at this point at least, feel comfortable transferring over my Roth IRA or my wife's Roth IRA from Vanguard over to a newer startup, a newer app. But you know what? If I was just starting out, I would feel way more comfortable starting off there and building up from there and just kind of riding it out and seeing where it leads, just because, you know, you've got less to lose, certainly. And nobody wants to lose, you know, any amount of money. But it's not like, I mean, you're not going to be losing money anyway. These apps are insured by the SIPC, just like any of the big players like Vanguard and Fidelity.
Yeah, so your funds are insured up to 500 grand.
Exactly.
At M1 or at Vanguard.
But something about starting off small and kind of building up with the company versus just sort of like doing this massive shift of all of your funds over. I would feel much more comfortable kind of doing the small growth model along with the company. It's like, we're in this together, versus feeling like you're coming to the table with a lot more chips and who knows how long they're going to be around.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's do a quick recap, Matt. Ultimately, I think that micro investing is this major shift that is breaking down barriers to investing and allows pretty much everybody to invest, whether you've got $5 or $500. I kind of think that's really neat in this investing revolution, that it's accessible to pretty much anyone.
Yeah, man, I love how it levels the playing field and it's, yeah, completely accessible. Yeah, and we only mentioned some of the bigger and better players that are out there, that being Robinhood, Acorns, and then the sort of honorable mention, the new guys for us, at least M1. But just keep in mind that this is a very fast evolving scene. There are a lot of players out there. There are a lot of folks, I bet, that are going to be out there that didn't even exist when we recorded this by the end of the year. And so be sure to do your homework. And we'll be sure to link to our favorites there on our show notes.
Yeah, and one of the pros of microinvesting is that it's easy to get started. You can be investing in stocks and ETFs in 5 minutes or less, you know, from the comfort of your own smartphone, which is nuts.
The second best thing, man, is that these apps have low or no fees altogether. When you're looking to save money, you don't want it to cost you money.
But sadly, micro investing really is going to mean micro results. And so it's not good to bank all of your retirement nest egg on pennies rounded up here and there, put into a portfolio of stocks. That's just not going to be enough for you to live on. And so you need to be thinking about investing on a level that far surpasses just micro investing.
And another downside is that your buying and selling of these stocks within these apps could be based more on emotion than they would be otherwise. You know, when it's as easy to sell or buy a stock as unlocking your phone and making, you know, two or three clicks, that scares me, to be honest.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think micro investing ultimately can be fine, you know, initially starting out and, you know, learning a little bit about stock investing with small amounts of money. But you need to have a plan for the long term, and you need to be saving more than just your spare change, which is what micro investing apps are really all about. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Our home on the web is howtomoney.com. We'll have show notes up there for this episode.
And if you like what you hear and have found this podcast helpful, please let us know by giving us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear from you, and be sure to subscribe while you're there. Until next time, man. Best friends out.
Best friends out.